Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the National Vocational Rehabilitation Webinar. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question and answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone. You may also enter any question at any time throughout the webinar by using the chat feature located in the lower left corner of your screen. If you need operator assistance at any time, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, May 10th, 2016. I would like to turn the conference over to Regina Baldwin. You may begin.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our monthly National Voc Rehab teleconference call. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. And our VR staff are here in the room and prepared to address the topics on our agenda and also to answer the questions that you might have. And as always, a reminder that if your questions aren't answered today or if you have questions on a daily basis, please reach out to our VR help desk. And that help desk email address is vr.helpdesk@ssa.gov. I always feel like I'm giving a commercial when I give that each month. But we do want you to always reach out to that help desk if you have questions. Danielle Armstrong, our VA VR staff lead, is not here today, but I have Raquel Donaldson here. And Raquel is on Danielle's staff, and she's also on our help desk. And she's going to share with you information that Danielle would have shared today. So let's go ahead and get started, and I'll turn it over to Raquel.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Raquel. Just a few things to go over. The latest month earnings file that was received was on April 15th. Also, in regards to resubmittals, we are receiving a lot of resubmittals that have different dates, and what I mean by that is the VR open date is the same, but we're finding that the VR closure date is different and the amounts on the resubmittals are different as well. We've asked the analysts and technicians to actually return those claims to the VRs. They should mirror, the resubmittal should mirror their original claim, meaning all the dates and all the amounts should always be the same. If you have any questions about that, of course, you know how to reach me at VR Help Desk or my direct line. Second, when you're sending your recons via the fax or the email, please make sure you include a copy of the claim, the SSA 199, just so we could have that. It makes it much easier for Shada and I to review. We had a couple of questions in regards to acceptable wage documents that we listed last time, so I just wanted to go over them again real quick. They are the SSA verified wages, the W-2 information, and the work number. Lastly, in regards to May's on-site VR training, it will be held next Wednesday, May 18th. We'll be hosting the South Carolina Commission for the Blind for the two-day VR Ticket to Work training. I think it's going to be Thomas Main and Shana Robinson and Elaine Robertson. So we're looking forward to having them here. And, again, if you have anyone on your staff that's looking for that two-day training, they can reach out again to the VR Help Desk or to Linda Custis directly. Now I'm actually going to turn it over to Shada Roper and Candace Whaley, and they're going to discuss work transition.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks again for joining us on today's call. In the past several months, we have been sending many C3 notices and requesting transitional work proof, and we noticed that this is causing some confusion for the VRs. In addition, it's causing a slowdown in our work processing, and, of course, it's also giving you more work. Therefore, today, as we were reviewing these kinds of claims, we decided that we would try to give you a bit of a workaround so that you can proactively send in these claims. On the call today is one of our policy analysts, ready with a quick presentation to explain what is transitional work and what is not transitional work, so you can prepare yourself for handling potential transitional work claims. Candace Whaley is on the line, and she is ready to do a quick presentation for you so that we can get that transitional information and you'll have a workaround to be able to get these claims out.
Good afternoon. I'm Candace Whaley, one of the policy analysts here, and I want to go over briefly what transitional work is and what we consider not transitional work. Transitional work versus no transitional work, when a no C3 notice is available. Our definition for the regs, transitional work defined, if the continuous period was preceded by transitional work activity, employment or self-employment, which gradually evolved with or without periodic interruption into SGA, and that work activity began less than a year after VR services ended, and any VR services which significantly motivated or assisted the beneficiary in returning to or continuing to SGA will be considered to have contributed to the continuous period, which is work performed during the year after VR closure. And this is the definition of our regs. Next slide, please. Transitional work. This is when work is performed less than 1 year after VR closure. We have a brief slide up here explaining what transitional work is and how the earnings are reviewed. Before starting working in March 2012, the earnings are below SGA, but are gradually increasing. They reach their 9-month CP of SGA on October 2013. This would be considered a payable claim. Why? Because transitional work was involved. Next slide, please. This is an example of no transitional work. This is when more than 1 year after VR closure, the beneficiary is not working, but then begins to work SGA. So, for example, the beneficiary is not working. They start working, making SGA in February 2013. And the 9-month continuous period of SGA is reached October 2013. You see, in this case, you will have to prove that you assisted the beneficiary by providing services that led to them working at an SGA level. Also, did the training you provide lead to the beneficiary's chosen job? And is the job they are working now the job listed as the goal in their IPE? If you know that your client has reached a CP of SGA more than 1 year after VR closure, this is what we're going to do. Please send a copy of the IPE and any case notes that you have with your claim. This will expedite the processing of your claim and alleviate the need to send you out a notice. In the remarks section of the claim, please enter possible transitional work. Are there any questions or concerns on this matter?
And actually, now, at this time, we can open up the lines if you do have questions just in regards to work transition for Shada and Candace. Please call in now.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask an audio question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star 1. And there are no audio questions.
All right. Now we're going to turn it over to Nate Arnold, who's going to discuss the VR case closure and medical CDR protection. Nate.
Thank you, Raquel. Good afternoon, everybody. Just wanted to take a minute or two to sort of remind everybody to be, the counselors particularly, to be as clear as possible with customers when their case is being closed, that they only have 3 months of CDR protection at that point unless they assign their ticket to an employment network or somebody else for ongoing employment support. We've had a couple of circumstances, cases come up recently where people had CDRs done on them and they, you know, kind of glibly said, well, I shouldn't get one because I have VR protection. But in fact, their cases have been closed for quite some time. And apparently the people were under the impression that because they had, in fact, worked with VR that they got apparently permanent protection from CDRs, and, of course, that is not the case. So, you know, the whole subject of when closing the case would be a natural lead-in to Partnership Plus to take that opportunity and say, you know, we know you're working, but you've got 3 months of protection. If you assign the ticket, obviously you'd get ongoing employment support and continuing CDR protection. So just a reminder item. I don't know why all at once we've had a couple, but it did seem to be a recent thing. And that's really all I wanted to say on that. So back to you, Raquel.
Thanks, Nate. At this time, we're going to do something a little different. We've had a few suggestions and requests in regards to getting feedback from other VRs for the out-of-state wages. There's VRs that are asking, what are the various sources that other agencies use to get wage information when the client is working from out-of-state? So at this time, if you all would call in and just give any information or thoughts what you're using to get out-of-state wages, I'm sure the other VRs that are asking for this help would appreciate it. Operator, can you hear me live?
Yes, we do have a question from Jadidia Cox.
Hi, this is Eugenia. With regards to, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Eugenia. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
With regards to the wage information, there are agreements between certain states to be able to give information between states. There is also other types of agreements. They're just verbal, that it's where you can call and they'll say that would be a good claim, but they may not be able to give you any wage information. So the state would have to call it in or send it in without any wage information. So it's kind of just a verbal verification. There's just all kinds of ways, and I believe at one point in time we put together a list of the states that would be willing to give some for partial information.
Eugenia, do you happen to still have that list of states?
Oh, yeah, probably. I keep everything. But again, it would be on a state-by-state basis. And,
right.
You know, it may have changed because there's a lot of turnover in the jobs that we do. So, you know, some states can't even tell you if they were working with the person. So, and I believe that Virginia has an agreement. I believe they sent it to me at one point in time. That's a written agreement from state to state that they may be willing to share. So, again, it's really on just calling the individual on the contact list from that state and seeing what they are allowed and not allowed to do. And just try your best as far as trying to determine. You know, sometimes what I do, and I don't know if anybody else has done this, when I am actually going through my claims in my ticket tracker, the Morrow ticket tracking system, I will see when I go into the portal, I'll see that the ticket's been assigned to another VR agency at some point in time. So what I usually do as a courtesy is if I feel that person has good SGA or, you know, I'm trying to guess that they have good SGA, I'll give that state a call and say you may have a potential claim on this client that you were working with. So, and, you know, that's another way just to allow that other state to also claim on the period of service that they serve them.
Right.
So, again, it really is developing relationships between the states, getting to know who your counterparts are, and making sure that you're providing as much assistance as they are able to provide.
Right. And just to piggyback off of what Eugenia is saying, I have a state VR agency directory that I send out. I try to update it every 6 months. So it includes all the SSA coordinators' contact information. If you don't have this directory, please feel free to reach out to me via the VR help desk or my email directly, and I'd be more than happy to get that over to you.
And one more thing, I tried to call in when the C3 question came up.
Okay.
I think you'd asked us to send that stuff ahead also before. You'd said if you have a non-transitional case that, you know, to be proactive and send it ahead. But in the cases, but, you know, looking at the handbook, unless this is changing in the handbook, it says that if you don't provide it, then a C3 letter will be sent out. That, is that going to continue to happen?
Yes, it would benefit you to send in all the case notes and the IPE so that we can, you know, evaluate the claim then instead of having to send you out the C3 notice. That will help those of us out.
Yeah, and I don't know about the other states, but to actually get the case file, you know, we may have to call Grant's house and wait 2-3 days before we get a hard copy file. Or we may have to go to an archive, this huge building, and look through boxes for the case file. So is it acceptable? Most of us have a case management system where we can actually print all these documents out, but it may not have the original signature on it. You know,
yes, that'll be fine.
Because we're dealing with thousands of people, where other EMs are only dealing with a handful of people. And when we're working statewide, you know, being able to print something out of our case management system is a whole lot easier than trying to obtain the file like we would for a PPR.
Well, that will be acceptable. You can go ahead and send that in.
Okay. But just as long as you have the information, it doesn't necessarily have to be the original.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that you were still going to be sending out those C3.
Yes.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of David Leon.
David?
Yes, can you hear me?
We can hear you. How are you?
Good, good. I just wanted to say that we use many of the same tactics as Eugenia in Oregon. Almost every state is able to share some information. I only know of a few that aren't. We did have to amend our agreement with our statewide employment commission to be allowed to continue to share that data. And I would be happy to take those clauses from our most recent contract and share them with any other state that's having trouble being allowed to share. The biggest issue, to be honest, is getting a response. And for my states that I border and we work with very closely, that's never a problem. But oftentimes if I'm trying to get information from a state across the country, we don't have that same level of rapport relationship. But I find that 2 or 3 emails, and eventually I'm able to get what I need. And, you know, the work number is also a great source, especially if the client's working in a position where you know that that employer is going to be listed. But the list you update every 6 months is going to have a contact for each state. And, again, I can only think of 2 that I know of that have told me they are not allowed to share that data. A couple do tell me, well, it's a good claim, I can't give you the info. And I will actually put that on the claim and say, I can't get this data, however, whichever state has indicated I should submit, please follow up.
Perfect.
And that's it.
Thank you, David.
Your next question comes from the line of Dawn Duvall.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Dawn in Alaska. Same things that Eugenia and David both have mentioned. Unfortunately, Alaska is one of those states that won't share anything with anybody. In fact, we can't even get enough information in a memorandum of agreement document in place for us to get the ticket tracker, to get our own UI wages from the agency across the hallway. It's kind of ridiculous how stringent some states are, and we happen to be one of them. So if I could get a list of those states, Eugenia, from you that other states that are willing to share wage information, that would be great if you could email it out. And then I was just going to also mention what David mentioned, the work number is the majority of where I find my out-of-state wages. We did come up with a form letter that we send to our client if we have a valid current address, that we ask for that information, if they could submit pay stubs or even just fill out the form with the quarterly wages. And I've sent that in before with claims. But it seems like no matter what type of wage proof we submit with the claim, Social Security has to verify that anyway. So if they don't have that same information in their own system, they're going to send it back as not meeting SGA, even when the wage proof is provided. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I've had that happen many times, and then I just turn around and resubmit it, because by the time I resubmit it, they then have those wages that I've already sent in. That's all I've got. Thanks.
Thanks, Dawn.
Okay, your final question comes from the line of Tom Schultz.
Hello. A more global, systemic, and long-term solution to this, I think, comes from WIOA, which contains language that the core partners are supposed to be able to access wage data that is produced from all the states. There's a program, the RIST program, Wage Record Interchange System, that there's an agreement that's currently being negotiated among the states, and that's being led by the Department of Labor, so that whatever state signs onto the agreement would be able to share and receive wage record information from the other states. And that's supposed to be, the agreement is supposed to be completed this summer, but I listened in on a teleconference call back in March among about 20 states that were participating in that, and at that time it did seem that they were a little ways off from a final agreement. But if that does come into effect, then VR agencies, as a core partner of WIOA, would be able to submit a request through their individual state Department of Labor, and that would go out to the other states that are part of the RIST system, and they'd be able to receive whatever wage information that that is available in the other states as documentation that could be used for reimbursement purposes. But the primary purpose that this RIST system is being developed, actually, it's a RIST 2 system that's being developed, I believe, is to be able to enable the core partners of WIOA to meet the WIOA reporting requirements for outcomes for services that they provide to customers. So that's long range, and it's a more global and systematic way of making that wage information from other states available to all of us.
Thank you, Tom. Operator, do we have any more questions?
There are no further questions at this time.
Thank you. We just have one more topic that we do want to throw out there for the VRs to call in and give your input on. It is the Ticket to Work Tracker. Other VRs are asking who's using the tracker and is it beneficial. So if you would call in with some input on that, I would appreciate it. Operator, no call-ins.
Yes, ma'am, we do. We have a follow-up question from Tom Schellick.
Thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hey, it's actually Eric over here with Tom. Can you hear me?
Hey, Eric. Yeah,
hey. We
hear you.
Yeah, we use the ticket tracker, and we find it to be very, very useful. We've been using it a little over, about 3 years at this point. And since we've used it, the reimbursements we receive have probably doubled for the state. I'm not going to attribute that all just to the tracker, but it does provide a better way than what we have been using before, which was a combination of paper tracking and an internal system that we created ourselves. So it's very, very useful. We've actually talked with Jay there before about how many states are using it. I think it's 29 state VRs that are using it in some form or another. So I know it's at this point, majority of the states, either the VR or the combined agency, or there's additional blind agencies using it. So I know it's a large number of the states We're not even using it to capacity yet, but it provides a nice way to link, once you're able to link your UI wage data, your SVES, your state verification of benefits through Social Security, and also your wage information all in one place, very easy to use, very simple process, and then it even assists in the actual generation of the actual claims that are submitted, so the forms themselves, so you don't even have to do that part yourself. So a very useful program. We've found it to be worth renewing every year, and we're going to continue to renew that on an ongoing basis.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
Your next question is from Mike Hermanson.
Yeah, this is Mike Hermanson in Montana, and I would pretty well echo the previous comments.
So you're liking the tracker yourself?
Yeah, it works real well. It's really helped us, and it's improved our reimbursements.
If you're on the chat, you can see it sounds like everyone is echoing Eric from Maryland sentiments in regards to using the tracker.
Okay, your next question is from the line of Pat Rourke.
Hi, I'm just wanting to emphasize that the tracker is a great tool to use for reimbursements. We've been using it in Minnesota now for about 3 years, and I have nothing bad to say about it.
Wonderful. Thank you, Pat.
We do have a follow-up question from David Leon.
Hi, David.
And I'm sorry, I can't see the chat.
Okay.
But I would say the exact same thing. Tracker has been a fantastic tool. Not only has it increased our cost reimbursement, when we first did a test run to see what the effect would be, it identified over 10 million in claims that were too late for us to submit, but it just immediately showed the power of this tool. In addition, if you start using all the features, there are ways to use it as a check and balance to make sure that every case that should be in use is in use. We've had great success with utilizing the in-use feature of Tracker at catching those transition cases that are suddenly awarded benefits or other cases where someone may have applied at application and receives benefits after service status. And Tracker has helped dramatically not only make sure those cases get placed in use, but is an easy report-out mechanism to follow up to see when that happened, if it ever comes up in a claim issue.
Wonderful. Thanks for calling back in, David.
Mm-hmm.
Operator?
You do have a question? One moment. If participant didn't leave information, call, your line is open. Please respond.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hi, this is Megan Hellam in California, and I will support everything everyone else says about the tracker, but also an added benefit to the tracker that we found in California for the volume of claims that we submit. It's definitely an added, feature to be able to use the tracker to process the volume that we've processed. And also, I've got to say that Jay Morrow and his team that administers and updates the tracker software, his customer service and his willingness to train and respond to questions is spectacular. He always goes above and beyond to make sure that, we're using the tracker to its fullest potential. So just wanted to add that.
Thank you so much. Operator.
Yes, ma'am. We do have one other participant that didn't leave information. Caller, you may please respond.
Hi, this is Eugenia.
Hi, Eugenia.
Hello. I've been using the tracker for about 8 years, and I've told everybody that if I wasn't in a relationship, I would definitely marry this thing. It's amazing in what it does, because for us to be able to do everything the tracker does, we would have to track everybody that's ever gone into plant that we still have record of. It is it puts those possible claims in our face. We still have to be able to look at them and know, you know, what we're doing. But it identifies things that we would never catch. And actually there's 37 states that have it, 37 state agencies that have it currently. I know because I just got that information. So there's actually quite a few states that have it that are lucky enough to have it. And, you know, the nice thing for Social Security is when we're able to generate all our data, our monthly data out of the tracker, and it knows what we can resubmit, what we can't resubmit, and it does it to date. And what I mean by that is when I would be sending in my data before, I would send you my data for, like, all of January. And it may be the end of February by the time I send it to you. So, but now when I generate these reports, and I started utilizing that function of generating the data, it will give you all the information to date. So you'll be getting all of January and almost all of February, depending on when I send it in. So you're actually getting data quicker than when I was sending it before or when other states were sending it before. So its functionality. It even will identify claims that don't have wages and that you can possibly try to find wages for those. And it imports all the information back out of the portal. It incorporates it in all the case information. So it is amazing. I know Texas would be giving it a thumbs up. They received it, and I believe they almost doubled theirs, their claims after that. I don't know if anybody from Texas is on the call. But like I said, if you're lucky enough to have the tracker, then you're going to increase your cost reimbursements. Thank you.
Thank you. Operator?
Yes, ma'am. We do have a question from Tom Schalick.
Hey, it's actually Eric again. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Eric.
Okay. I just wanted to follow up with one other thing, and that is that Jay is also very willing to work with you if you have a request. We actually had, when Cuber was still up and running, we ran the report off of the portal, pulled all of Cuber's responses off, and had Jay upload it into Tracker, and that produced for us a huge kind of influx of potential claims. So he's very willing to try, like, different things that it may be not designed for, but it's certainly in the capacity. And that really was very successful. So it was something like the risk that Tom was talking about comes back around. I'm sure Jay would be very willing to work with states to try to increase their, you know, functionality. I did have one concern, and it goes back to the very first thing that Raquel was talking about, and I think it's related to Tracker, and that's the resubmittals with different closure dates and different amounts. And I think that's a Tracker issue, because I know we did it several, and it's on cases that we were submitting when the case was still open. So what Tracker does is it puts a closure date as the date that you created the case, and then it gives the amount that you spent up until that point. Now, I just resubmitted on several, and when I did it, I noticed that it now used, even though I used resubmittal out of Tracker, it used the more recent date when I was entering that resubmittal request, and it used a more recent dollar amount based on that we've since spent more money. So I think that's a Tracker issue, and we might want to try to get some clarification there. But I did want to bring that up because it ties into what Raquel was talking about at the very beginning of the call.
Thanks very much, Eric. At this time, we're going to go ahead and open up the lines for any questions regarding anything, any topic. Please feel free to call in. And I just wanted to request that you keep your questions to two question maximum. We do want to just give everyone an opportunity to call in, or as many people as possible until 4 o'clock, to call in and ask their questions. If you're not able to get your call through, you know, you can feel free to reach out to the VR Help Desk or to one of us directly. Operator, are there any calls or questions?
Yes, ma'am. We do have a question from line of Annie Starzen.
Hello?
Annie?
Yes. This is Annie from Texas, Zafran. I was just going to comment on the resubmittals of claims when a claim is stayed open. My understanding is that you have to put a close date on every claim. So whatever the close date was for that original claim, that's a close date you have to use, even if in truth it was closed 2 years later. And so what I do to avoid any issues is I actually go back and pull my original claim, and then I make it so that the close date is still the original close date that I had on the original claim, even though technically the claim was open and it is now closed. And that way I have never had the issue of more money being put into the claim. I cut it off, and that never enters into the claim. So I think that's probably the best way to avoid just basically what ends up to be different claims when you send them in for resubmission. If that makes sense.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Annie. I didn't even pay you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Operator.
We do have a question from the line of Gina Hope.
Hi, Gina.
Hi. How are you guys?
We're well. How are you?
Good. Hey, so I just have a question regarding the resubmittal. So now, if a case is open when you submit it and it is denied because the person has not yet reached FDA, so then you wait a while and resubmit it, but in the meantime, services are still going on. Would that not cause the amount to change, and it would be valid amounts that you could submit in because they have not reached SGA and you're able to claim on that, but yet it is a resubmittal or reconsideration?
Hi. No, basically, when you have a resubmittal, you can't change the amount for the VR period. What we do is when your case closure has no date on there, we use the 9 months of SGA that you have as your employment date on the actual claim. If you resubmit your claim and you want additional ACT or tracking, that is not allowable because that's considered the same claim that we denied for SGA for a certain period. It doesn't change the amount or the closure date.
Right, but what I'm saying is that there is no closure date at the time. It's still open because obviously we still submit on some that are open. And you're saying, you know, and when you say SGA has not been achieved at that time and that's why the claim's not paid, you wait a while, they're still receiving services, they still have not achieved SGA, and now when they've achieved SGA, you send it back in with the new points of SGA, but there would also possibly be new services that would be provided during that time.
But the one thing that for the resubmittal claim, we can't change the dates and give you additional money for that period. So when you submit a claim, we have to have a VR closure date in our system when processing that claim. So when there is no closure date, we have to use either the 9 months of SGA or we send a claim back if we don't have anything.
Right. So what I'm asking is that if we send it in and you guys say no, because normally what I do is I put what I believe is the 9 months of the SGA, and if you say no, they didn't reach SGA, are we able to then redo it with the new 9 months of SGA if they proceed on and then hit 9 months of SGA? Is that considered valid?
No, that's not considered valid because you're sending in the claim based on a period of SGA. We check for the SGA, and then the claim is denied due to that SGA period. You resubmit the claim, but you can't change the dates or the amount on that claim, regardless of when we say we reached the SGA. We're still tracking SGA just as you are.
So, but if the case is open and they're still getting services?
And according to
thought they reached SGA, but they have not.
According to our regulations, we cannot change it. That's why for all these years you've never had anybody submit a claim with a different amount or a different VR closure date and be paid for that resubmittal. Because according to regulations, we cannot add additional money for tracking, ACP, or direct costs. That would be considered a supplemental. Once it's paid, you can resubmit the claim for additional direct costs or post-employment. But you can't be paid for additional ACP and tracking during that period.
Okay. That just seems weird to me. Because of a still open case and they're getting SGA, and they have not reached SGA, but you submit it thinking they have and they don't, and it stays an open case, they're obviously going to gather up stuff and your date of SGA is going to change.
Okay, we do have another question from the line of Donna Osborne.
Hi, Donna.
Hi. Along the same lines, I was wondering if you had an open case and it was denied because the person hadn't reached the 9-month SGA like you thought, could you just send in a new claim on that same case, not call it a resubmittal, so that it could have a new closure date and a...
Hi, this is Candace again. Basically, if you submit a claim that was denied and then you're sending in the claim again and it's during that period, we can't process that claim. It only can be processed as a resubmittal, recon, or a supplemental. Our system doesn't allow in the middle of the dates, basically. You can't have in-between dates going on, so it's not going to process it. It'll kick it out on our end. It's not what we decide. Our system is based that way on the VR enter date and the VR closure date. We can't override that.
Donna, you still there?
Her line withdrew from the question. Your next question is from a participant. Your line is open, participant. Please go ahead with your response.
Hi, this is Eugenia.
Hi, Eugenia.
Hey, so what I hear you saying, just for clarification, is when you submit a claim and it's that claim has to stay the way that claim was. But instead of being able to correct it because the case wasn't closed, which happens a lot, we have to now submit it as a reconsideration or a resubmittal, but exactly the same, and then we have to go and produce another claim from the end of that period to when they actually closed or when they reach SGA, whatever, at the end of the SGA period. So now instead of us submitting one claim and taking care of it, we're going to have to resubmit the original claim as is, and then turn around and do another supplemental claim to get any other money. So basically we're having to do twice the work. Is that what we're saying?
What we're saying is once the claim is paid, then you may submit a supplemental claim for additional direct cost or post-employment. We cannot pay for one claim and then you submit a claim during that period because our system pretty much will tell us the VR is between previous dates, and it won't allow us to override. So when you have a claim and you submit it and it's been denied, you're going to resubmit it as a recon or resubmittal, but it has to have the same dates. We cannot change the dates.
Yeah, so we have to resubmit the original claim as is, and then for us to get the rest of the money that may be owed us, maybe it was a year later, but we're still working with them, and they still haven't reached SGA, and they finally did reach SGA. Now we have to go back and do a supplemental claim for the end of the first claim to when the new, to the end of the SGA period or when we close them, whatever comes first. Is that correct?
Eugenia, this is Raquel. Keep in mind with the supplemental claim, you can only pay direct costs and post-employment, and it has to be within the net payment period of the original claim. So if the dates on your supplemental do not fall in between the net payment period for your original claim, you can't submit it.
No. Okay. What we're saying is let's say we're sending somebody to school, and we think they reached SGA halfway through their employment plan. Okay? So we send it in. And it gives us a date. The tracker automatically says, okay, as of today, we're closing it, even though it's not closed. Okay? So we submit it. You guys deny it because it didn't reach us yet. Okay? So that's the original claim, so we have to keep it as that claim. So we're trudging along, monitoring it again. And a year later, we're going to, because we think they reached it again, we're going to resubmit that original claim with that original closure date that we gave it. But we may have a year's worth of expenses You're saying when we do a supplemental claim, after that first claim was done and you end up paying it, let's say you end up paying it, after that date of closure, we won't get any administrative costs or tracking. All we'll get is any expenses that we may have incurred from the end of that to the other, right? Is that what you're saying?
Eugenia, we're going to have to go ahead. Why don't you call us on the VR or send an email to VR Help Desk, and we'll discuss this further with you. We have to follow the regs, so what I'll do is I'll send you the regs so that way you know that we are processing the claim correctly. And if you have any other questions that you want to talk about, you can call me directly. Again, my number is 410-594-2122. If anybody
has any questions.
Yes, this is. Yes.
Okay. No, what I'll do is I'm going to do an example just for clarification, and I'll send it out to all the states so you can clarify just to see is it this or this, and so there'll be something clarified. That's what I'll do.
That's fine.
No. Actually, Eugenia, we'd rather you wouldn't do that. We'd rather that, you know, we can talk to you about this so that you're clear and everything. And then if anyone else has questions, they can address them to the help desk also. And then we will address those questions. So,
well, I believe that there's more than just me that's confused about this.
Okay.
So I believe this has to be a group effort here.
Anyone that has questions in regards to what we're discussing can feel free to reach out to Candace, myself, or Shada directly, or the VR Help Desk directly.
Okay.
And we'll
I'll send my question just to you, and then what I do with the response is really up to me.
Operator, any other questions on the line?
Yes, ma'am. We have one from Warner Grantor.
Hi, this is Warren. Hi. I have a question totally different, if you don't mind. And the question is, I fully expect to no longer have to do the RSA 113 report. I'm not exactly sure when, but they're going to discontinue it. But my question is, would I still need to create these reports anyhow in order to do the cost formulas to determine our admin rates in the future?
Warren, I'm sorry, could you repeat your question?
I believe that RSA will have us discontinue our RSA 113 reports. Okay. My question is, will I still need to do them in order to do the cost formulas to determine our monthly admin rates in the future?
No, if and when the RSA discontinues the 113, then we're going to have to figure out a different way to work the cost formula.
So, okay. Thank you.
We're pretty much on standby like you, but it's a great question.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Operator?
Yes, ma'am. We do have one final question. Hi, questioner. You may proceed with your question. Your line is open.
Hello?
Participant, your line is open. You may proceed.
What did Phil Donna used to say? We would have waited. Okay. So, doesn't seem like, is there any other one waited in queue, operator?
With data terms and definitions related to the LGBT
Andy, your line is open.
Well, I tried to withdraw my question.
Okay,
is there a way to do that now? We used to be able to press *3, but it didn't seem like it took.
Andy, you're on the line with us all.
Well, I wanted to withdraw because I was like beating a dead horse. I was just going to say about the whole resubmittal thing that it's just one of those things where you're out of luck. I mean, at least that's the way I see it. I understand that it's really not fair to us, but I've just accepted that that's just one of those things, and I've kind of moved on with that. And then I thought, well, that's not really a question, so I tried to withdraw it. So is there a way to withdraw questions? That's my question. We used to be able to press *3 and to withdraw a question, and now it seems like
there's no way to actually, if you say, I want to ask a question, then you think to yourself, no, I don't, how do you withdraw that?
That I don't know. Operator, do you answer that?
I'm sorry, what was that question again? I'm sorry.
If I would decide that I don't want to ask a question, how do I withdraw it?
I can withdraw you now. I'll place you back into
no,
the conference.
But I mean, in the future, if anyone decides they don't want to ask a question when they thought they did or someone else has already addressed it, how do we withdraw a question?
To withdraw your question, press the pound key.
Just press the pound key?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, that's terrific. Okay, thank you. That's what I wanted.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Annie.
You're welcome.
We will definitely follow up on the next month. I'll be all call in regards to the questions and concerns in regards to resubmittals and reconsiderations. Our next call will be on Tuesday, June 14th at 3 p.m., and I look forward to everyone being on the call if possible. Thank you very much for calling in or being on the chat line or both.
Hey, this is Regina. Thanks, everyone. This was a good call today, and we really liked the input and everyone who participated. We appreciate that, the comments. And, again, if you have questions today that didn't get answered or if you have follow-up questions to the discussions from today, just contact our help desk, vr.helpdesk@ssa.gov. Thanks, everyone.
This does conclude today's webinar. You may now disconnect.